Hey everybody, welcome back to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by my co-host, Jesse Rivas. How are you doing this week, Jesse?
Doing good. You know, I was a little bit disappointed with the judges at the past UFC. It really disappointed me because I thought it was a phenomenal card. I thought there were two close fights, back and forth. I felt that we just had bad judges. There were like three blind mice. It was insane.
Was the main event difficult for you, seeing one woman with like a foot thing going on, but the other woman has an Asian thing going on? Did that like set you in your fetishes?
I scored it. It was close. It was competitive, but I scored it 150-145. Michelle Waterson.
I scored it 36-24-36 versus. Yeah, man, fucking Joanna beat the shit out of Michelle Waterson.
See, I didn't view it that way. I completely saw ring generalship. You know, it's not about how many punches land.
Yeah.
It's not about how many punches land. It's about how you play the game. And if you score it that way, I think Michelle Waterson wins unanimously.
Man, Michelle put up a fantastic fight. And Joanna, there was a little bit of a question before the fight if she was going to be a little too thick. She had to get that thickness down before the fight, which is a crime. We should be allowed to vote against that, Joanna has to pull down the thickness under no circumstances.
She looked okay when she went up in weight. She was all right.
At 125, she looked great. She looked great down at 115. She looked great landing over 200 significant strikes to Michelle Waterson over the course of this fight.
I mean, that's just statistics.
Was it that her foot looked so big and swollen because of like a check leg kick, or was it just in comparison to the comparatively tiny feet of Michelle Waterson?
See, you know what happened? It's because Michelle Waterson, she like went with the knee, but she went ahead and went with the kick, and like when the two bones collided, the beautiful, thick, juicy bones of Michelle Waterson were just far too much.
Way to make it sound like you're a serial killer, like trying to like, man, I just want to chomp on her bones a little bit. If I could just do little. That, yeah. What'd you think of this fight? It wasn't necessarily like an entertaining fight, but it was a good performance from Joanna. And Michelle, man, I know it's her style, I know it's what she loves, but nothing is dumber than seeing her whiff on these like, yeah, point karate kicks that are like a million feet away. And like just trying to get the judges to see that like she knows how to throw them. There's nothing on like 90% of these kicks. They're such bullshit.
Yeah, it's from a different time. It's a relic from a different time.
Yo, get together. She's got a modern 2019 body. And she has got a 2006 skill set. Yeah. Michelle Waterson has now upgraded with the times.
Where do you think Joanna goes from here?
She's going to get a title shot or be in a title eliminator. What I think we might see, depending on what we see with the champion, Weili Zhang, and there's going to be a lot with that because there's so much fucked up shit going on with China. Man, what about like a Joanna versus a Tatiana Suarez? I think that's a great fight.
Think that's the bigger fight because Tatiana Suarez doesn't have a name.
I don't think she needs a name. I just think you need Joanna in there. Who's a name at 115 that's going to draw?
See, Zhang Weili versus Joanna, that's a big fight.
No, if we can get that fight together, yeah, but I'm saying Weili might be having some difficulties here because like there's this big China PR problem. True. And Joanna's being managed by WME. WME is not going to want to put one of their marketing darlings in there with Weili. So Joanna might need to kill a little bit of time.
But Tatiana Suarez might kill that run.
Yeah, fair though.
Yeah. So that doesn't seem like a good strategic move to do.
Especially no, it's a fight I want to see.
Yeah, especially since you bring such a big name into this card. Like, it's way more beneficial for the champ to fight you than it is to fight the person you could potentially lose that too. You know what it reminds me of? You remember when Jermaine Taylor was being hyped up? He was a champion, and they needed a big name, and there was this, like, badass Colombian who was knocking everyone out named Edison Miranda. He was whooping everyone. He had these great highlight reel knockouts. And then they said, okay, you know what? Jermaine Taylor is going to sit out because he's injured. Just fight this guy Kelly Pavlik before the title shot. And the rest is history. Kelly Pavlik versus Jermaine Taylor happened. Edison Miranda never got this title shot.
He was fucked ever since. I mean, you know, we talk about Kelly, but we don't talk about the other guy.
The other guys who he became after that. Sometimes
it sucks.
Believe it or not, he was the big money fight at that time.
So looking at this division, where do you think Ioana goes? You think it's Wiley? She gets plugged right in?
She has to. It's the fight. Because if Wiley wins, there's no shame. And also, that's a big name that boosts her credibility even higher, because you won from a person who's a transitional champion. Can you beat the person who held down the division for so many years?
You make some good points. Somebody else who put themselves around is Carla Esparza is back in these streets. And a rematch there, I mean, that was almost like a, like...
Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva.
I was going to say Jose Aldo versus Cub Swanson, where we didn't really know if this person was all that. We put him with an established contender, and they kind of embarrassed him. Well, in this point, in this case, it was more of like a champion. And they just kind of embarrassed him. And the champion might have more skills than they showed, and they, you know, need to... They've kind of earned the right to... Have a good performance. Man, talking about Cub Swanson, great performance. Great performance over the weekend from him.
See, I thought Crone won. I thought he dominated that fight.
Do you also think the earth is flat?
That's the greatest. You know what that reminded me of when he said that he won the fight? It literally reminded me of when another second-generation fighter, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., got dominated by Andrew Fonfara. And they interviewed him after the fight, and he was like, man, I was bullshit. I won that fight. And his reasoning was, he was bigger than me, but if we were the same size.
Meanwhile, his fat ass didn't want to cut the weight. It wasn't a toughness issue. It was a tacos issue. You fat piece of fuck. You righteous gemstones piece of shit.
Side note, he's coming back to fight against Danny Jacobs at 168.
I think Danny Jacobs is going to whoop him. I might place money on that fight. But man, Cub Swanson just, you know, big brother's crawling all night. Great striking on display. Even shows some good groundwork. But mostly it was just shot selection, distance control, fucking him up with a coffee pot. And Cron didn't have a solution, right? Cron comes from this sport jiu-jitsu background, the sport jiu-jitsu rule set that his parents and family helped make, have kind of doomed this generation of grapplers because they don't value the ability to take the fight to the ground on their terms. You know, they're happy to pull guard. And they get stuck up in these bad positions. So it's kind of ironic.
It is ironic. It's a tough pill to swallow when your father allegedly has 400 victories and no losses. Like, for you to have your sixth fight is a loss.
This is what, the second Gracie loss in the UFC? No. Holes Gracie lost some, including one to Joey Beltran. Hoist lost the one with Matt Hughes. He also lost at least one more, I'm sure.
There was that Gracie who I want to say got his ass whooped by...
Like the heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost to Joey Beltran. He lost to a couple guys. Holes.
Yeah.
He wasn't as good. So we've seen some Gracie losses, I take it back. People were being a little inconsiderate of Cub's skill set coming into this fight, right?
Well, we said he was the gate.
We said he was the gate, yeah, and he held the gate. But, like, I heard people afterwards, like, amazed that he could win a fight. Guys, Cub Swanson's really good. Cub Swanson is very talented in all phases of MMA. He is the gatekeeper. If you can beat him, you're worthy of a title shot. And we've said it about gatekeepers before. So you got to hold the gate sometimes. You can't just lose to everybody. You know, otherwise you're a bad bouncer. Some people you got to turn away and crumble.
In other words, you're a jobber.
Yeah, you're a jobber. You're the Brooklyn bouncer. Brooklyn Brawler, and we saw it, man. He did exactly what he should have done.
Speaking of the Brooklyn Brawler, did you know when Doink sucked, that was the Brooklyn Brawler?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Oh yeah, Chris Jericho was nearly the Doink.
Really?
Yeah, he could have been Doink. No, he could have been the Goon.
The Goon.
Yeah, there was a hockey character.
I remember that. That was a really weird, stupid character.
Yeah, because his dad got introduced. His dad was in the NHL. And they talked to him. They're like, we have this character for you. We want to bring you in, but it didn't work out. And like 2 weeks later, the Goon was introduced. And it was like, oh no. That was definitely what they had in mind for me.
Did you know that they tried to do that with Razor Ramon? They tried to make him like an Army Ranger. And he came in there with an idea. That's where he like won Vince's heart. Because Vince is like, we're going to have you be an Air Force Ranger. And then he was like, Vince, if you want me to be a G.I. Joe, I'll be the best G.I. Joe you've ever seen. But have you ever seen Scarface?
Let's talk...
Last side note about that. Do you know how we came up with the idea of Razor Ramon?
From Scarface?
No, but the
you
name.
You fucking idiot.
The name Razor Ramon?
No.
He was taking a piss next to Tito Santana, and Tito Santana gave him the name.
You could just say Tito Santana gave him the name. I don't need to know that they both had their dicks in their hands.
Well, the way he tells the story, he was so excited and nervous when he was talking to Vince that he tried to stall by going to the bathroom to take a leak because he was trying to, like, remain confident in front of the presence of Vince. So he went to go pee next to Tito Santana, and Tito Santana gave him the advice of Razor Ramon.
So Dimitri Bivol over the weekend won over Lenin Castillo. Bivol started slow in this fight, but Bivol starts slow in a lot of fights. And he ends up picking up kind of an uninspired win here over Castillo. What'd you think of the fight?
You know, you play to the level of your competition, and I feel like Bivol has been devolving since we saw him dominate Sullivan Barrera.
Yep.
Part of it is not his fault. It's hard to get people to want to fight Dimitri Bivol. He's a very hard person to fight. But at the same time, he hasn't been challenged the way he needs to develop to be able to fight like Berdabiev, Favazic, Kovalev, that I feel like he's kind of being left behind. I feel since he's a small 175, he should move down. And since he is in the same home as Callum Smith, he should try to fight Callum Smith, try to fight the Danny Jacobs of that weight class, and maybe get a Canelo fight.
Man, but there's tough guys on this list. Isaac Chalemba, mid-level guy. Jean Pascal, super tough. Joe Smith Jr. is very, very tough. And then Lenin Castillo. I think this might be the best guy in the world at 175, but they're kind of stuck in like a Klitschko situation, where the guy who's ruling the roost is just a boring motherfucker. But to see him go down would be really good, because he doesn't have pop in his punches, right? He's just missing that oomph.
And he's small. He's a small guy for the weight class.
Yeah, straight up. Man, let's talk about it. We unfortunately have bad news. Patrick Day passes away after injury sustained in the ring to Charles Conwell. Man, and he was getting beat the fuck up. And the referee wouldn't stop the fight, and the corners wouldn't stop the fight. And easy enough to say it in hindsight, but people were saying it in the moment. The commission should have stepped in and said something. And Patrick Day pays the ultimate price, passes away.
You know, I didn't get the feel that there was a moment in that fight that should have been stopped. I mean, I felt...
He got knocked down a couple of times, though, right? He got knocked down, like, 3 or 4 times.
But it didn't look any crazier than when Frankie Edgar was given the shot to continue against...
Okay, but that's an extreme example.
But we've seen examples that are less extreme where it wasn't... That's the part that was the scariest, and the reason this is reported the most is because we've seen worse pretty frequently. It wasn't like one of those other ass whoopings where you're like, all right, man, stop the fight. This is gross. My stomach is turning.
I would say the last one we had with the Russian guy...
That was a stop the fight.
I can see where you're coming from, but I felt like he was really pouring it on in points.
Yeah.
I feel like there was places where the referee could have stepped in and nobody would have complained. And I feel like the corner... hopefully next time everybody can look at this and see this as an unacceptable level of ass-whooping over time.
Yeah.
Clearly. It's something boxing has been getting better about, throwing in the towel, I would say. Or at least even just saying, like, hey, this is enough. You know what I mean? Like, I see how the rest of this fight's going to go. Let's get out of here while we still can. But unfortunately, Patrick Day passes away. And it's
story.
Super fucked up. Super sad.
From everything I hear, he was a great prospect. He had a lot of potential. He was just about to hit his prime, 27 years old. That's when you start your boxing prime, 26, 27. And he was a phenomenal, nice guy and a great training partner to everyone. So we lost a great one. We lost a potential great fighter.
We lost a really potential great fighter. It's really unfortunate. Our hearts go out to that whole community. Man, but let's look at somebody that we nearly lost and that we're lucky we didn't, and that's Errol Spence Jr.
Yes.
We have not talked about that since, because we recorded like Tuesday last week. I think it happened like the next morning. So Errol Spence is driving around his car. Under the influence.
He just got charged today.
Seatbelt undone. Gets thrown from the crash.
Breaks his jaw.
His face is super cut up. His teeth are super cut up. His shoulders, I think somebody said, a separated shoulder.
Yeah.
Man, he's in bad shape.
They're actually surprised he did not die.
Crazy, right? So there's a couple phases we can talk about this. One, how long until is he one, how lucky are we that he's not dead?
Yeah.
Because he easily could have been. We easily could have woken up to news that Errol Spence passed away. One of the, maybe the hottest rising star in boxing, right? In terms of like guys who can be that number one pound for pound guy, he has that, or at the very least had that, if not still does. Man, are we ever going to see him back in the elite status? Or are these injuries too much?
He's at the level where he can make a full recovery. I mean, think about like Vinny Pazienza.
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen phenomenal like comebacks where people have recuperated from insane damages. But, I mean, think about the damage that he received. All right, so his shoulders, highly important for his fight style.
Mm-hmm.
His iconic chin, he has a phenomenal chin. He has a broken jaw. Mm-hmm. We've seen how fighters recuperate after broken jaws. They're not the same anymore. His teeth popped out of his face. And then imagine what type of brain damage he received from that accident. He may never be the same again.
Facial lacerations.
Yeah.
Bad news. And not for nothing, when he's back on this recovery thing, this is a guy who was already barely making 147. Now what? He's going to be, you know, 2 years out of the ring, and he's going to come back and make 147? Unless he sees some serious atrophy, you know, a lot of guys will get a lot bigger when they have that much time off. And so we may be done seeing him at 147. Just overall, for a young, promising career, already at the elite of the elite and hasn't even really hit his prime yet, this is just super horrible news.
And it doesn't look we're ever going to see Crawford versus Spence.
No, man, write it off. Because how long until he's back to a level where he's fighting elite guys, and then how long after that is he ready to fight Crawford again?
Yeah.
Three and a half years, really? You know, optimistically, if everything like hits its stride nicely, 3 years?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
It's a damn shame.
Not going to happen.
It's a damn shame. I almost wish that Porter had pulled the upset.
I know, yeah. Then we would at least have, you know, some shine on the right guy.
Yeah.
It's super sad, and it's kind of a lesson in don't delay the big fight, right?
Well, no, the lesson is don't have crazy vehicles.
Don't have crazy vehicles and don't drive them drunkenly.
Because, yes. I mean, think about Frank Mir. You remember the Frank Mir comeback? Where he was not the same for years after that motorcycle accident. He was on top of the world at the time. He was the man. What's he, 23 years old, UFC champion. He was banging this incredibly hot model chick or stripper chick.
Killing everybody with submissions.
Yeah.
Doing things that heavyweights haven't done since or, you know, before or really since. You know what I mean? To be a guy who walks in there and in the first 90 seconds every single time is on a fight-ending submission. That was revolutionary at heavyweight. Still kind of is. But yeah, he fucked up his femur. Holy shit. Man, about as bad as it could get for Errol Spence and still have a glimmer of hope.
Well, I feel like Errol Spence had a way worse accident. Did you see the pictures of that damage? It looks like someone died.
In the car? Oh yeah, for sure. They're saying he got lucky by getting ejected. I don't know if I believe all that. I feel like people just say that sometimes so they can, like, try to, like, wiggle some positivity out of it.
No, if he had a seatbelt, I bet it would have been worse. No.
No, I don't think that's true, right? That sounds like bullshit. Man, let's look forward to the weekend.
Well, let's talk about some positive things that happened in boxing recently. So we have Tyson Fury in the WWE.
Oh, are we going to talk about this? Yeah, he's fighting in the WWE.
What a beautiful strategy. So here we have ESPN's guy. This is their heavyweight. Box's heavyweight is Deontay Wilder, who's busy training now for a big fight against Luis Ortiz. Once he wins that fight, then he gets to fight Tyson Fury. Now, there is a delay in this fight. This fight was supposed to happen at the beginning of next year. But Tyson Fury, as you remember, ended up getting a bad cut and has to take time off. So what do we do to build off Tyson Fury while he's recuperating from this cut that he received against a bum recently?
Dancing with the Stars.
Better than that. Let's get him on a show. Well, you have a show on Fox that's highly viewed, that's kind of a combat sport.
And kind of highly viewed. The ratings did drop by over 1 million after the first week.
Wow.
Yeah, from 1 to like 2.8. Yeah,
that's
not good.
Insane.
Yeah,
but he gets to branch off to another demographic and build some name on the channel where Deontay Wilder fights.
He does get to do that. Tyson Fury is He is on ESPN. He is actually on there the same time Cain Velasquez is debuting to take on Brock Lesnar in like a rematch of their actual fight. Which, by the way, shouldn't their pro wrestling match just look exactly like their shoot fight? If wrestling is going to keep kayfabe, right? It needs to be like a one-for-one knockout, you know, in the first 3.5 minutes of the first round.
You know what used to always make me laugh is I used to always hear people talk about that guy's a shooter. Like the Sicilian shooter, Little Guido. Or like they'll talk about this guy's a shoot fighter. And I once was like, well, what do they mean by shoot? They're like, oh, he could fight for real. Wait, they're just openly...
Yeah, literally. Yeah, that's a great point. Like, what do you mean?
Dean Malenko is a tough shooter. And it's like, wait, did you just admit that this is fake while you're commentating the fight?
Okay, so yeah, Tyson Fury's going to be in WWE. That'll be cool. He's going to... some weird thing. It's like this weird show for one of the like members of the Saudi royal family who wants us to forget about all of the horrible things that they do.
Well, think about it. If this leads into Tyson Fury fighting Braun Strowman at WrestleMania, that takes us up until April, which means he could fight Deontay Wilder in the summer, so he'll be fully healed, but his name will still be in the spotlight.
It will. Do you feel like he risks losing some credibility with the boxing hardcore that fuck with him so much?
No.
No? Okay.
Because, I mean, think about it. Okay. The first thing I saw from boxing hardcores afterwards was Muhammad Ali doing pro wrestling. Floyd Mayweather doing pro wrestling. Mike Tyson.
No, that is not what I saw. I saw people that were nonplussed that he was hopping in to the squared circle.
I saw
because he was on that fake bullshit.
I saw a lot of people who were like, well, all the greats did it.
Do you think he's going to do the Undertaker sit-up?
That'd be awesome.
He's gonna, right? Has to. He totally has to. Man, let's talk the boxing that's gonna happen over the weekend. We have at 175 pounds, Alexander Vozic is taking on Artur Beterbiev. And I am stupid excited.
This is the best fight you could possibly make. This is a fight that if this fight never happened, it wouldn't have shocked me. I would have been like, yeah. Two guys with complicated names who are phenomenal boxers who
hit like trucks.
Yeah.
Who hit like absolute Mack trucks are going to stand in the middle of the ring and fuck each other up with coffee pots.
This is a World Boxing Super Series type fight.
This is a bare knuckle boxing type fight is what it's like. I cannot wait. These two are going to beat the fuck out of each other.
You know, if we go back to the beginning of combat sports, if we go back to the caveman era, this is what it would look like. Just two big, strong, bearded men beating each other's faces in.
I thought you meant these two literally look like cavemen, which is also true. They physically have these weird Eastern European bone structures.
So, they're from the same region of the world, they're about the same age, they're undefeated, but they have fought in the past. In the past, you had Beterbiev winning by stoppage. How do you think this is going to affect the psychology of the fight?
Man, Beterbiev has only ever won by knockout. He's 14-0 with only knockouts. But this guy has good technical skill. What I wonder is his power going to translate later into a fight? I doubt that it will. Heavy hitters like him, they tend to kind of... That power has a shelf life in a fight. It has a half-life. And it tends to, over time, just sort of degrade. And I'm expecting if this fight goes after like the 7th, 8th round, Vozic is going to have... more of even punch power than he will at the very beginning of the fight. But still, man, Vozic is what? You know, he knocks out a lot of motherfuckers, too. He knocked out Adonis Stevenson bad. And he won his last one by knockout, too. Chalemba, he retired on the stool. This guy knocks out a lot of people as well. He'll pick up a decision win or two, but he's got heavy hands. He's not going to want to step backwards either. He's Ukrainian. These guys only fuck. And an Olympic gold medalist. These guys only fuck. Speaking of fucking, Jesse's currently sending a Tinder message.
No. I'm kind of confused about which is the best way. So you have Beterbiev, who really has not really fought anyone. Let's be honest. If you look at his resume, he's got impressive knockouts.
But
he
hasn't fought anybody.
He's been built up properly, but he hasn't fought anyone. But then you look at Vozic. Vozic low-key has been knocking out good fighters, like, he has more names and he has more proven fights. Like, for example, early on in his career, even though Otis Griffin was past his prime, he still KO'd Otis Griffin in his fourth fight.
Otis Griffin had lost his previous five.
Yeah. Then you have, he beat Tom Comparsi, Carpensi, who is a gatekeeper. He's a solid gatekeeper. If you beat him, then you're probably a contender. He beat Isaac Chalumba really badly. Nobody dominates Isaac Chalumba, and he dominated Isaac Chalumba. He beat Adonis Stevenson.
Craig Baker. Craig Baker's a good win. That's Craig a good Baker's win. 17-1.
Yeah, that's a good win.
That's a good win. So only guy to beat him at 18.
So going into this fight, he actually has, I think, the better preparation, or have we just been preserving to see what the best is of Berdabiev? It's a lot of questions.
I mean, yeah, it's a question because we have no fucking way of knowing, right? But I predict that I'm going to err on the side of competition and go with Vazic to pick up steam late and pick up a 12-round decision win. What do you think is going to happen?
I was going to go Vazic, too. I mean, you got one guy who's a world amateur champion, but you have another guy who's a gold medalist. I'm going to side on the side of the gold medalist. He's more proven, and that victory over Adonis Stevenson, no one could do that for a long time. I mean, we saw what Adonis Stevenson did to people. We talked all the shit about him ducking Kovalev, but he beat the crap out of everyone else. Vazic proved that he could do that. So I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, the winner of this, if Kovalev beats Canelo, that's going to be a huge fight.
It's going to be an enormous fight, although I would be amazed if Canelo fucked around 175 for longer than one fight.
Yeah.
That would truly shock me. 168, I think he'll do. I don't think he's going to do 175 again. Can we look back again at the UFC card that happened and talk about that upkick knockout?
Yes.
Holy shit, what a knockout, right?
Amazing knockout.
Unbelievable. Nico Price, second knockout off his back in the UFC, and this is the second upkick win ever in UFC history. First one was John Fitch over Thiago Alves. Holy shit. James Vick goes up to 170 pounds and still gets knocked the fuck out. Another upset. Amanda Ribas beat Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah.
Those big mommy titties were fucking flapping around the octagon all night. All right, moving along. We don't need to talk about it. We don't have a podcast about it.
I love it. I think it's great. I mean, the more you get Mackenzie Dern in there, the better. I like to see her against Rachel. Like, I think that'd be a phenomenal fight.
Rachel who? Oh, of course. Ostovich.
Yeah. Ostovich.
There you go.
Yeah. I think that'd be a fantastic fight. It'd be a great booty fight. They both don't win, and they both are high.
That's the new BMF belt for the women. Bootiest motherfucker. looking ahead, this Friday, there's a fight card.
It's a Friday card.
Yes, and Friday I'm actually going to be in Boston, but I'm not even going to be able to go to the show. In the main event, Chris Weidman, former 185-pound champion, moves up to 205 to take on Dominic Reyes. Weidman is a guy who's had some horrible luck over the past few years. Listen to this record. His last five fights. Loses the title to Luke Rockhold. Could have won the fight, made a bad decision. Loses to El Romero in the third round. Was winning the first two rounds up to them. Gegard Mousasi, he loses with a TKO by a knee. Was winning the fight up until that knee was very controversial. Beats Kelvin Gastelum, who just was in a UFC interim title fight. And then loses to Jacare after winning the first two rounds. Man, there's five fights, four of them were losses. He could have been 5-0.
Yeah.
If he zigged when he should have zagged, he could have won all of them. Dominic Reyes has won all of them. He's an undefeated guy, but in his last fight against Volkan, he kind of got a little bit of a, not a gift decision, but it was a real skeptical decision, right?
The fact that this is Weidman at light heavyweight, correct?
Yes.
That there gives me a little hesitation in terms of picking him because he's had all these tough, great fights against great fighters at middleweight at the highest level. But you're moving up in weight. And this is one where it's going to be very telling to see how that's going to affect. I mean, look at Luke Rockhold when he moved up. He wasn't losing to the top of the food chain. He lost to a guy in the weight class.
Yes, but Luke was also starting to lose to just guys at middleweight as well. And his chin's been going. I just feel like we need to recognize that skill sets are skill sets and weight changes don't help that unless you have a couple of very specific problems. You know, unless your problem is you're cutting too much weight, then a weight change isn't going to help you much. Or maybe a power issue. Weidman, I don't think he's going to have a lot of power 205. I do think he's going to have a lot of skill. I think you need to recognize when you're talking about fighters as good as Luke Rockhold, Yoel Romero, Jacare, Gegard Mousasi, these are guys with serious skills, serious black belts in different disciplines. Man, you know, Yoel Romero's an Olympic medalist and a world champion. You're not going to get the same level of character at 205 pounds.
I think Dominic Reyes has proven that he's a gatekeeper level guy.
I don't know about that. He's 5-0.
He's 5-0.
He's undefeated.
But who's his 5-0 against?
He beat Jared Cannonier, who's turned it on at 185.
That's a gate.
He beat OSP.
Good gate.
He beat Volkan Ozdemir. Fought for the title.
Could've.
He got the win.
But Volkan's
I don't think you get to call somebody a gatekeeper until they lose. I don't think you get to call somebody an undefeated gatekeeper. That's my opinion.
Well, we'll find out, is he a gatekeeper or is he a next-level guy? Actually, we won't, because even if he holds the gate, then he gets the opportunity to prove that he's not a gatekeeper against someone else.
No, this guy's a contender. This guy's the real. I do think Chris Weidman's going to beat him, though.
I got to go Dominic Reyes. He's going to hold the gate.
The gate. Fuck you. So disrespectful.
Do you see him be a world champ? Is he beating John Jones?
Well, you're not a gatekeeper just because you're not going to beat John Jones. That's a little bit of a high bar.
Do you think he beat Anthony Rumble Johnson?
Potentially.
Do you think he beat Daniel Cormier?
Man, what is your definition of a gatekeeper? Anybody but a world champion?
My definition of a gatekeeper is someone who would never be world champion.
Not never be world champion. So anybody that's not world champion or has, man, that's you're being a drama bitch.
If I have to beat you to be a contender for the title,
have to beat everybody to be a contender for the title.
John Fitch, gatekeeper?
No, he could have been a world champion. He's one of the best welterweights of all time.
Where do you start counting gate?
He only lost to GSP, who's the greatest welterweight of all time. The argument could be made that John Fitch is the number two best talent we've ever seen in a weight class, and you want me to call him a gatekeeper? Under no circumstances.
Okay.
He went off on like a 10-0 run.
Who would you consider a gatekeeper? Koscheck? Is he gatekeeper?
Even Koscheck is a little high for a gatekeeper. Jeremy Stevens is a gatekeeper.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Like, okay, he has a ton of losses. Don Cerrone's a gate.
Yeah.
You know, has a ton of losses, but he'll beat some good guys.
So who's not a gatekeeper, who's a contender, who never won the title?
Dominic Reyes. How about that?
All right.
So there's one for you. You know who's a gatekeeper in this division? OSP.
Yes.
That's the gate in this division. And Reyes beat him. He beat the gate.
Is Volkan a gate?
Yes.
So who's not a gate? So
Dominic. I've been very clear about this.
I would dare to say Rumble Johnson was not a gate.
Yes, because he's one of the best 205ers of all time.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Bader in the UFC maybe was a gate.
He might have
been a little too good to be a gatekeeper. He might have been a little too good. Maybe like a Phil Davis. Anyway. I think Chris Weidman's going to win. I think he's going to use his wrestling. I think he's eventually going to submit him, kind of by holding his head underwater and just sort of, maybe with like a choke of some kind, taking the back or like a front choke. But that's my prediction. Man, we talked about him. I think he's a gatekeeper, but he's a hell of a gatekeeper. Jeremy Stevens versus Yair Rodriguez,
part two.
Happened 3 weeks ago, except it didn't. 15 seconds in, there was an eye poke. Yair poked Jeremy Stevens in the eye. Doesn't dispute that he did it, but says that Jeremy was faking the injury.
You know what this reminds me of? Do you remember when Stone Cold Steve Austin fought against Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13, and then you saw the switch? It went
the
from
double
good
turn.
Guy
the
to
double
bad
turn.
Guy. So here we are in Mexico, in another country where Yair's a hero fighting against Jeremy Stevens. The whole world is rooting for him, and he turns heel. Now he goes back to Jeremy Stevens' country, in the USA, and he's coming back as a villain.
Man, Jeremy should come out to some fucking Springsteen or something, right? Really fucking burn it down. I thought Yair did himself a lot of disservice with his performance in Mexico City. He acts like a petulant child. He fouls the other fighter and stops the fight because of it. And then he goes around acting like he's entitled to the other guy being okay with it, when he was the one that created the situation in the first place. And it was mad fucked up. And I think Jeremy's going to come in and take his head off now.
Yeah, I feel like there's a mental weakness there.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Kind of like, And I just feel like if things aren't going well and if push comes to shove, and I think things are going to come push to shove here, it's the back alley rule. When a fight's going to look like it's in a back alley, who's just the tougher pit bull, right? And that's Jeremy Stephens in this division. That's one of the toughest motherfuckers here. And he's still super tough. He had a lot of good exchanges with Zabit when they fought. That was a really back-and-forth fight. Before that, he beat Gilbert Melendez and Josh Emmett and some other really tough guys. He's putting together a nice run. I think it's his time. Jeremy, I pick him in this fight.
Yeah, I got to go with Jeremy on this one, just because I feel like the mental breakdown of Yair, it just showed weakness in my eyes.
Man, yelling at Michael Bisping like that? Fucked up.
Well, he didn't, like, yell at Michael Bisping. He yelled random curse words out of anger. Like,
and to whom did he do that to?
It was more like he was...
But if you were to say he directed those curse words at someone, who is the commentator that they were directed to?
It wasn't towards him, though. Like, I mean, it was towards him, but it wasn't
okay.
He basically said, shit, motherfucking crap! Like that.
No, he, like, called him a bitch. I know what pendejo means.
Yeah, but he wasn't, like, calling him a pendejo. He was just saying random curse words. Like, it was almost like...
It was a bad look.
Yeah.
It was a bad look.
I can see where you think that, but, like, if you were, like, to, like, go back and see what it was basically he was so belligerently mad he didn't have real words.
Could I go say that in the middle of South America? Oh, no, I'm just mad at the situation, everybody. That's why I looked directly into your eyes and yelled, pendejo.
He went, shit, motherfucker, bitch. Yeah.
Shit, motherfucking bitch. Yeah, don't say it to Michael Bisping. He's only got one eye.
And he will beat you.
Yo, he did amazing work with only one eye.
Yeah.
He won the UFC title with one eye. Throwing a hook on the side that didn't even have an eye. What else is going on this week? Macy Barber's in action. She's the future at 115. That's her nickname, at least. 21 years old, cute girl, 7-0 undefeated. Picks up a lot of ground and pound victories. Man, Macy Barber's tough. She could be something in this division. She's fighting Jillian Robertson, who's also super duper tough.
I look forward to seeing it.
It's gonna be good, man. I think that might be it for the weekend. Do you have anything else?
That's pretty much it, man.
Man, I'm excited for next week. We got Askren versus Damian.
That's gonna be a great fight.
That's gonna be amazing. Anything you want to say? Put yourself over. Anything?
Follow me on social media, Jay Rivas Comedy on Instagram and Jay Rivas on Facebook.
Follow the show. You can follow me on Instagram, Joseph M. Gilpin, or Morgano BJJ. Or you could find me on Twitter at Bad Tweets. For everybody else, we'll be back here next week on the Fighters Block.